I've had a week which is not so great because I've been forced to take some antibiotics, which I'm not a big fan of. And that's made me kind of like rather weak and full of aches and pains because of the nature of it. And yet in another sense, that forced me to think about and deal with another issue, which I think would be interesting to talk about today. I've been somehow, well, let's put it like this, that usually when one is dealing with more esoteric kind of things, when one is more flying around in the universe, so to speak, one is perhaps not as connected to this practical physical realm as one should be. And when you are forced by your bodily condition to deal with that and to understand things on a more practical level, it does open your eyes to a certain extent. It forces you to understand things from a very practical point of view, which is in its own sense good. Now, I'm not saying that it's a good thing to be forced to take various medicines, because that means your body's not functioning the way it's supposed to. Yet at the same time, these alternate experiences, which force us to deal with our own reality from a different point of view, can be illuminating. Now, I don't mean illuminating from the point of view of some great spiritual revelation, but I mean from the human point of view. One thing that I have understood, and which I constantly keep in my mind whenever I have to deal with people, is that the human point of view is topmost in anything we do. One should not think that, all right, we're dealing with spiritual things, somehow or another we have transcended human nature. It is not a disgrace to be human. Neither is it a great problem or something that has to be overcome. It is rather a facility, rather an opportunity to express ourselves in this particular way. I've had the opportunity over the last week, also due to my cousins, for some strange reason, to again contact that realm of people who fall into the category of gurus or spiritualists of a very high order who receive a recognition in that way. And although I have no particular contact with any of those persons, I have seen how the human aspect, it just becomes so obvious to me when I look, I see that the human aspect is so incredibly important. In fact, the interesting thing about these persons that I've come in contact with is that they were so incredibly human in their existence. Now, the reason I considered that significant is when I look into my own life, I look into my own experiences, I see that you can be surrounded by thousands of people and be totally alone. In fact, it has certain similarities to being central stage in a performance. Just consider a singer or an actor who's center stage. If they make the slightest mistake, they can face condemnation by their adoring audience. In reality, they stand very much alone. They stand on stage very alone, and they are performing. They are sharing their particular capacity with others who have paid or in some way have bought into what they are doing. So to do that, they have to perfect their discipline, perfect their particular art, and execute it flawlessly. So we sit in the audience and we observe these personalities who are doing that. We assume that their lives must be filled with all kinds of wonderful things. We assume that having an enormous amount of money, having fame, having beauty, having recognition. These things are something to be strived for, something to be attained, because when you get them, you'll be very happy. Yet we see in reality that all of these people are human, just as we are, except that they have a particular talent, a particular capacity, which we wish to pay for. Yet at the same time, they are dealing with, struggling with, and having to conquer over almost the exact same problems we have, but in another way, just a little bit transformed manner. I have been in the homes of extraordinarily rich people, people who are in the top echelons of wealth in the world, especially in India. And I have, shall we say, observed or become aware of the particular flavor of humanness in these environments. You would be amazed at the similarity between yourself and any particularly opulent personality. And you can see from their words, from their actions, from the way in which they deal with their situations, how troublesome their success can be at times. Now, there's a lot of things I could talk about. There's a lot of ways in which I could display their particular difficulties. But I want to focus in on the point which I wanted to speak about today. It's a point that I've also experienced, and I know others have experienced. It doesn't matter where you are situated on the wealth line, where you are situated on the opulence line, the strength line, the beauty line, regardless of where you are placed within the scale of haves and have-nots, everyone has this in common. And that is alienation. It is the concept of, it is the difficulty of alienation. It actually represents that particular situation which makes every living being feel comfortable. When you are alienated from yourself or from that which is around you, you are uncomfortable. When you are not, you feel comfortable. I see this also very much in animals. In fact, animals are much more upfront about this. Domesticated animals have to feel very connected to those who take care of them. Otherwise, they don't feel very happy. They want our attention. They want our affection. They want our approval. And they want our care. My dog cannot live without being recognized and accepted and loved. My cat, even though he stays out most of the day, when he comes in, just absolutely insists, love me. The horses that my wife goes to, they're very dependent on the people who are around them. They really want to do well. That's because animals are not so complex in their mentality. They don't have the capacity to become neurotic or disturbed. They, in that sense, mentally, by creating mental ideas. Even though they do have their own neuroses, of course, but they are very straightforward. Love me, take care of me, and appreciate me, and I'm yours. People are much more complex. We have this extraordinary capacity to be surrounded by others, even to be appreciated, respected, secure by others, and still feel alienated. It is actually an amazing thing about human beings, how we are so contradictory in some senses. Now dealing with this concept of alienation is very difficult. It's it brings up the question of love. What is love? Now, I don't claim to have the capacity to properly speak about love or to even be able to define it for you. It is one of those, shall we say, qualities which do not lend themselves to definition by words. It's not really a concept. It's an emotion. It's a feeling. Concepts you can talk about. You can talk about them from the theoretical point of view. You can talk about them from the practical point of view. You can quantify them. You can qualify them. You can manipulate them. Now, love you can talk about a lot. You can speak books about it. However, you will never really be able to define it in the same way you can define, for instance, a pen. The pen has a color, has a shape, has a size, has a weight, has a quality, and has particular characteristics that you can very specifically talk about. Now, how heavy is love? Well, you can say it's very heavy. How deep is love? Well, you can say it's quite deep. Or what's the color of love? Or maybe you could say pink. There are things you can say, but you can't really specifically quantify it. The proof of the pen is that I can write with it. I mean, everybody can say a pen is something you write with. It may be a million varieties of pen, but you write with it. It's a single particular characteristic of a pen, which unless it's there, it is not a pen. Okay, you may have a pen without ink, but when it had ink, it had its particular quality of being able to write. What is that red thread, common, undeniable feature of love? Okay, here we get into difficulty. I'm not saying it's impossible, and I'm not saying that one shouldn't try to describe it in such a fundamental term. I could, for instance, say, love is. Now, sure, love is, but then again, that really doesn't say something specifically enlightening unless you understand being. Now, of course, okay, understanding being may not be the most difficult thing to do. I mean, after all, it's not like a mystical concept. It is actually the very basis of our existence. Everybody knows what it is because we're doing it all the time. We have, of course, put things on top of it, but we basically understand it. How much you acknowledge it, how much you deal with it, how much you can live within it in the moment, that, of course, depends on the person. And actually, love comes in many flavors. And each of those flavors is uniquely specific to who we are. My flavor of love is different from your flavor of love. And I wanted to talk about the marvelous difficulty of speaking about universal love and individual love. Sometimes when a singer is singing a song and moving the whole audience falls in love with the singer. Because he or she has managed to strike some chords or sympathetic vibrations in all our hearts. And that has awakened within us our own love. So what we are so appreciative of is the fact that our own love has been aroused. So in reality, what has happened is that we are loving to love. We are loving the fact that we are loving. And at times like this, we become alive. We become alive. We feel that being, that love, that is, we connect to it, we contact it. Now, this concept of universal love, this concept of that broad-based love that we can experience is an extremely difficult one to put a finger on, to massage into a discussion even. I think it's because that universal love is devoid of sensuality. that when there's an individual relationship of love, for example, even that singer who to a certain extent represents universal love, there is always some form of sensuality involved. Take, for instance, the singing of the singer. There's a sensuality there which connects with our own internal sensuality, and it awakens it in such a way that there's a connection between us and the source of the sound vibration. Now, when we speak of like a universal kind of a love, which I'm not even sure if we can understand it very well, but let's just say, for example, the universal kind of a love, what we are speaking about is a love which is just broad, which is wide, which is all-encompassing and beyond any particular individual. I found, and pardon me for bringing it down very much to my personal situation, but I found that when people were trying to deal with my transformation or whatever you want to call it, they confused this universal love with personal love. Any individual, it doesn't matter who it is, under certain circumstances, under particular situations, has the capacity to emanate or represent that universal love, or to reflect it. One can channel, sorry for the word, but can be a conduit for the flow of the universal love of the divine, of the very aware beings, and let it just emanate out so that others may experience it. In fact, even one who's performing could do that for the sake of the audience. Even one who's performing in a spiritual context can do that for the sake of others. So we can see that in our own present physical time-space continuum, or some personality from the past who may be still performing that function in the etheric level. So we can feel that. We feel it and we appreciate it and we embrace it because it's something that we like. So we claim it as our own. We claim it, we embrace it, and we expect, that's part of our expectation, that the source of this is connected to us in the similar way that we are connected to that source. Now, this is not like a mind-boggling point. It's kind of common sense. Yet, for those who have understood it, it's an easy thing to know. For those who have not understood it, it's a very significant thing to understand. Let's just take a little example. Let's say we've got a great movie star. So, some person may come up to the movie star and say, "Ah, you don't know me, but I like your movies and I think you're great when you're performing, but I know that, you know, we have no particular contact." And then there's the other kind of a person who will go up and say, "Oh, I'm in such love with you, and you know, I just really have to have you." Now, both are expressing something according to their own particular realization, and from that point of view, it's fine. But the one who, in the beginning, says, "Well, you don't know me, and I'm just one of your fans," is more aware of the actual dynamic of that relationship. From the point of view of the performer, the performer feels more satisfied with someone who deals with the performer as a regular person. Now, there are some stars who have this particular problem very much. I mean, it's just fun to talk about because it's also illuminating. For example, Russell Crowe, I don't know if you know him, but he's a big-time famous star. Now, when you watch him in the movie, he can be anything. He can be any part, he can be any person, and you really think this guy is completely together, this guy is completely expert, powerful, and you would expect to meet him in person and he would be the personification of all his skills. But he gets very bad press by the columnists because he, as a person, is extremely different than his professional appearance. They quote him as being arrogant and egoistic and angry because if anybody asks him about his particular skills, he says, listen, I'm the best there is. If you get me, you'll get the absolute best performance. I'm really great at what I do, and I want the money to compensate me for how good I am. And don't get in my way, because if you do, I'll just slug you in the face. So columnists write like that, and they use this as a means to stir up interest in what they're writing, because they are creating this illusion that this person is not a good person. The one you're seeing and you're glorifying is not really a good person. For example, when Bill Clinton was president, everybody was kind of happy with him, but then all of a sudden he got involved in a sexual scandal and it became a huge thing. Now, in America it was a big thing, and in Europe people said, you know, what is the problem here? You didn't elect a saint, you elected a politician to run the country. What are you getting on the case of this fellow for? Because he's just being human. All that you should care about is whether or not he did his job properly. If you think about it, in the Vedic culture, it was so much wiser in that sense that the kings, you know, they were just, you just accepted they were just absorbed in sensuality along with all the risks and troubles they had to take. So back to the point. When we are dealing with somebody who is giving some kind of a universal impression, it doesn't even matter if they are, for example, of a demigod variety or whatever. When we experience this, we are experiencing something which is not necessarily directly connected to the source of that. Now, I'm not saying that the love is not connected to the source, because it is. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to experience it. But what I'm saying is your experience of it may not be connected to the source that you think you are connecting to. To a certain extent, it's like a radio antenna or a TV antenna that is spreading its transmission everywhere, and people are receiving it and appreciating it and connecting to it, but there is no specific connection between you and the antenna. You are connected to the transmission, to the energy of it. Now, that example is not perfect in the sense of when you're speaking about people, because people can simultaneously be a transmitter and thus detached, and a relator, and thus connected. Just like any performer or even any spiritualist who does their particular presentation, they may have a very large group who they are presenting their energy of love, but within that they have individuals who they can specifically relate to. And from their point of view, it is much more valuable in the human sense of the term, the specific relationship and reciprocation of love on an individual-to-individual basis than the broadcasting of it. Let's take that concept and bring it up to the platform of the divine, to Radha and Krishna. Let's take Krishna, for instance, because I think when we deal with Krishna as the broadcaster, it makes much more sense. The one who stands out front, the one who, as God, with big G, broadcasts that divine love within the context of that support of all beings within that matrix of existence. So that personality who's just transmitting that love everywhere, that everyone feels connected to, and at the same time assumes and expects a personal relationship. Yet, at the same time, that personal relationship is based on our desires for mercy, our desires for protection, our desires for fulfillment of our desires, or our desires to have the opportunity to render service, or whatever. So please consider, it is still of that rather, to some extent, impersonal, detached universality, and the connection to that universality in terms of what we want. And as we all know, there is another point of view, which is Krishna's point of view, who wishes to have a sensual, direct connection with those who come in contact in love. There's a sensual connection with the animals that Krishna pets. There's a sensual connection with the friends who are playing and wrestling and joking. There's a sensual connection with the girlfriends. There's a sensual connection with the parents or the relatives. Now, the sensuality and sexuality are not equivalent terms. So Krishna's having this sensual connection with all of them. Yet at the same time, he also has, above and beyond that sensual connection, a very specifically intense sexual connection with some of them. Now, naturally, Radharani's role is similar yet not similar, in the sense of she's not a broadcaster in that sense. She's just a permeator as a nurturer. But beyond that, I think you're understanding the point of the difference between the universality and individuality. Now, regardless of your philosophy, regardless of what you say or what you think you believe or even what you believe, universal love, which has that detachment built into it, resembles what philosophically one might call impersonalism. I think the words impersonalism, personalism are completely misused. I think they're not very clearly understood, and I think that they are misrepresenting the reality of what's going on. Therefore, I want to redefine them in this way. And I would like to go so far as to say, until you really have that sensual connection, until you really have that direct connection, you don't really have, in its deepest sense, the personal connection. So I would like to just take away all these philosophical definitions and philosophical judgments that we make about the way we feel, the way others feel, and so on, and just set them aside. Because what really I'm speaking about here is the alienation that we can all feel. So I've gone through this explanation, albeit rather rapidly, getting to the point of understanding the difference between a universal kind of a love, forget this impersonal, personal, this universal kind of love, which to a certain extent is detached, and the personal kind of sensual connection. And the interesting thing I find about this is that all of us, regardless of where we stand on some kind of a hierarchical, which is non-existent, but anyway, a hierarchical situation, we all have the same basic kind of experience. And it doesn't matter whether you're God or you're way down here on this earth, the very nature of spirituality, the very nature of our energy creates this characteristic difference. That difference being that universal, or shall we say, larger scale love, which is not directly connected, is quite different from the direct connection you have, a sensual connection you have, again, as opposed to sexual, with any other individual. So we all have it. We all have the same, shall we say, dilemma. We all have the same exact arena within which we feel. So let's take that back down to the human platform and examine this in relation to the concept of alienation. So long as we are not connected, we have the capacity to feel alienated. Alienation meaning the disconnection, the separation of ourselves from something. You can be in a shopping mall surrounded by hundreds of thousands of people and feel totally alone. Yet transform that group of people in the market and place them in a concert where they're all focusing on the same artist, they feel connected. They never think about being alone. They never think about being alienated because they're all connected to the same person. Yet in reality, from the point of view of that person, there is still that alienation. It's just a kind of a temporary relief from it. Every performer knows the thrill, the buzz of feeling the connection with the audience because everybody's connected to you. You're connected to them in that sense. There's this reciprocation like that. You feed off of it. It gives you a thrill. Yet afterwards, there's you and there's them. It is not really a connection. They go their way, you go your way. Both are human, again. So the idea is that we feel this alienation, we feel this disconnection most of the time in our lives. And it's getting worse now as time goes on. Actually, these certain basic social features that have been traditional in society, which are breaking down now, have directly addressed the problem of alienation. The family unit was so essential, is so essential, for giving everybody a connection, a deep sensual connection where lives are shared, people are sheltered, love is exchanged on a day-to-day practical basis. Friendship is there. Friendship, society, community. These things are essential for building bonds between people. It's something which some spiritualists speak of as illusion, yet at the same time, without it, you can become really lost in an alienated, impersonal kind of a void. These social structures, which have been there since time immemorial, which are also glorified in every single spiritual culture, are structured in every single spiritual culture, are essential because they give us the opportunity to interact directly in relationship with others in love and feel connected, and thus the more we feel that connection, the less we feel alienated from others, from ourselves even, because we are social animals. As society becomes more and more advanced, as technology becomes more and more advanced, as the way in which things are presented becomes more and more advanced, we have hundreds of thousands of choices, and we have to spend so much time just dealing with all these choices. And the more choices we have, the more time we have to interact with things, the more time we have to interact with all these impersonal things. And since we're all doing this, and even when our children are there, we put them in front of a TV or some game, video game or whatever, because we have no time for them. What's happening is that we are all separating more and more and becoming more and more alienated. And yet, when we are by our societies forced to interact, it makes things quite different. It makes things closer. In older times, when it was time to harvest, everyone went out to harvest together, or they went to plant together, or they had markets together, they did things together, they spent the evenings together. If you think about it, nowadays we spend a lot of time concentrating on computer screens or on TVs or in other forms of media. But in the old days, people just had each other to communicate with. I'm not saying, therefore, the older days are better, because there were tons of problems then too. The reason we've gone to this, what we have now, is because of those problems. Yet we've gone so far away from the traditional way in which people related that we have become alienated as a race. So I was just trying to bring out that awareness of our requirement to not be alienated, our requirement to feel connected between each other, our requirement to relate on a more sensual, again, platform where we're relating to each other as people to people, person to person. And whatever groups or whatever situations we may be in, we have to always keep this in mind, that the individuals are always the most important. Now, I'm not going to say that I have any particular answer to this. I'm not going to say I have some great solution to this. But I feel awareness is more important than anything else. And where there's awareness, there's a possibility to transform the situation and actually embrace that personal relationship which we so thirst for without being afraid of it. That's a whole nother discussion.